Hello? The same. Is better?
Bo? Like this? Ah, it's recorded, okay. So... Wow, so I have to see clever things. Okay, so first of all, let me apologize for being late. There was a problem with my flight that was canceled, so we'll have to squeeze a bit my lectures in today and tomorrow. So the topic is inflation. I'm afraid that by now we are convinced that alternatives to inflation like equivariate models are... I'm late, unfortunately, so I have to, to catch up a bit. But okay, so when I think about inflation, I think it's useful to divide the topic into various levels, and I will follow this in my lectures. So at first, you can think about inflation as a classical theory in which quantum mechanics is set to zero, so there is no quantum mechanics, h bar is equal to zero. At this level, we are just talking about a classical field theory plus general relativity, obviously. This is the starting point, and in this framework, we can discuss problems like how the universe evolves, how you solve the problems of FRW cosmology. Then, as you know, it's quantum mechanics plays an important role, so we can turn on quantum mechanics, so set h bar equal to 1. In this case, you know that perturbations arises, and we will study in some detail. The first step is to treat perturbation as a free field theory, a free quantum field theory. This is the conventional treatment, so you treat each Fourier mode as independent because, as we see, this is an excellent approximation. So this is the second layer, if you want, of a discussion. You discuss quantum mechanics in inflationary universe, treating each Fourier mode as independent in the sense of a free quantum field theory. And then you can also go on and think about interactions, think about what are called non-Gaussianities. Which is a fancy way to say that there is some deviation from a free quantum field theory, as you expect, which are small, but they have some interest that we will discuss. So there are various levels of discussion and of complication, if you want. Let me start from the first one, first of all. So let's turn off quantum mechanics and study inflation in a classical field theory. So in this context, I want to discuss very briefly the problems with hot FRW. So we just mentioned the conventional horizon problem in particular. Then I will show why inflation solves this problem, and we see that in general inflation can just be defined as a period of expansion when the second derivative of the scale factor is positive, so the universe is accelerating. Okay, so this is the most general definition, if you want, of inflation, and we see why this is relevant. Then we'll discuss very briefly old inflation, if we have time, which, as the name suggests, is the old picture of inflation, but it's still interesting for some reason. And then we'll go to the standard picture we have by now of inflation, the so-called slow-roll inflation. Which is, as I said, the conventional scenario nowadays. In particular, we'll spend some time in studying the simplest scenario of a quadratic potential, but everything is easily generalizable to more complicated situation. I don't think I will have time, but maybe I say a few words about reheating, which is the end of inflation. So if you want the the transition between inflation and the hot FRW universe, and in particular say something about preheating, which is, as we discuss, a non-perturbative, if you want, version of reheating. Anyway, so this is the plan for the first part. Okay, please ask me questions, because I also have jet lag, so start, no? Okay, okay, let's start. So forget about quantum mechanics. We just live in GR with the classical field. So what are the problems you want to address? Well, I'm sure that you know what I'm talking about, so I will be very very brief. So the problems with the standard hot FRW cosmology, without inflation or without some sort of the conventional old-fashioned picture, is a problem of initial conditions. Okay, is a problem of extreme fine-tuning of initial conditions. I'm stressing these because, you know, our point of view about fine-tuning problems change as time goes on. If you think about the cosmological constant, the hierarchy problem, all these things. So it's important to stress that it's not a problem with data. It's not something that you can say, okay, this for sure it doesn't work. It's a problem of naturalness. It's a problem of fine-tuning, an extreme fine-tuning of initial conditions. So this is the problem that inflation wants to address. In particular, let me say something about the horizon problem. The horizon problem is easily seen if you write down the standard FRW metric. So we know that the scale factor goes like t to the 2/3 in matter dominance, and it goes like t to the 1/2 in radiation dominance. Okay. So at a certain point, one can ask the following. So imagine that I leave, I take a constant time surface in this metric, and I choose a point P inside this. So it makes sense to ask the following question. Which are the points surrounding me that were able to send some information before time T? Okay. Clearly, this in Minkowski does not make much sense because there is an infinite time in the past. So clearly, every point is connected to me. There is time to send signals everywhere. But in this kind of universe, given that at t equal to zero there is a singularity, so if you want, this picture starts at t equal to zero. In principle, this may be finite. Okay. So let's calculate. So we want to, again, we want to know the set of points that were able to send a light signal to me starting from t equal to zero. So this can be done as usual using conformal time, which is just defined as this. In this case, the metric takes the form, the conformal form. In this, why we choose this kind of coordinates? Because, as you know, light rays, they travel at 45 degrees once the metric has this form. So causality is very easy to study. And here we are talking about causality. We're looking at the propagation of light rays starting from the Big Bang onward. So in this picture, notice that, first of all, that this integral converges towards the past, towards t equal to zero. And this is both in matter dominance and in radiation dominance. Okay. So in this diagram, I have a beginning, which I can set to be eta equal to zero. Here there is a singularity. So this line, if you want, is the Big Bang, so I don't have to look at what happens before. And if I take a given point, I have a given cone. I have a given life cone, which goes back until the singularity. Now, what is the horizon problem? Well, let me first of all calculate this this quantity in. We can make it in matter dominance, but it doesn't really matter. So I can calculate more properly what is called the particle horizon. The particle horizon is just given by this expression. So it is this is just the conformal time to the beginning times a. So this means that it's a physical distance calculated at a given time t. It's a physical distance, and it tells me what is the physical size at a given time of this region. Okay, so it's the region that at time to communicate with me since the beginning of time, so since the Big Bang. Okay, so, well, we can do this calculation. So A goes like A0 t to the 2/3, okay, in matter dominance. H is clearly 2/3 1 over t. And if you calculate this quantity, what you get is very easily, you get A times 3 t to 1/3 over A0, and this is equal to 3t. Which is 2h minus 1. Okay, so the prefactors are not very important. In fact, if you change from matter dominance to radiation dominance, this factor changes. But the point here is just to show that this quantity is of the same order of the Hubble distance, the Hubble radius. And this holds in matter dominance, radiation dominance, and even if you consider some mixture of the two. So let's again look at this diagram and focus on the CMB. The CMB is very neat when you want to study these kind of problems because it involves photons, and causality is. Usually, when you think about causality, you think about the propagation of signals, so photons in space-time. Moreover, the CMB is very neat because with an excellent approximation, photons, they just free stream from recombination to us. Okay? Something happens sometimes, but it's not very important. So it's a very nice, it's a very good approximation to say that what we observe on a CMB map is really a snapshot of the universe at recombination. Okay, so and not much happened in between. So it's really like saying that we are looking at our past life cone. And in this picture, so here I have a singularity. Here I am looking backwards. So in 2 dimensions, obviously I am looking around myself in various directions. I'm receiving photons. Free streaming to me since recombination. Now, in this picture, in 2 dimensions, I'm looking at 2 points which are coming from opposite side of the sphere. And so this is eta zero, the present conformal time. And then there is a conformal time of recombination, eta r. So if you take 2 points opposite in this drawing, you see that the horizon problem is very clear. So when we receive photons from opposite side of the sphere, we are receiving photons from regions that they had no chance to communicate with each other. Okay. So I think the CMB is really a very nice way to see this problem. So from this picture, I would expect the CMB to be followed by many, many spots. Okay, and now we're going to calculate how big these spots are. But the important point is that I would expect many spots with a completely different temperature, because I expect that these two regions, given that they didn't have any way to send signals to one to the other, and for sure they didn't have time to thermalize, there is no reason why they should be at the same temperature. Of course, it's a question of initial conditions. I can always set initial conditions to say that they have the same temperature, but it's something that I have to put by hand. I cannot imagine in this framework a mechanism to make these two regions to have the same temperature. So the horizon problem is the statement why the universe is so homogeneous on large scales, and in particular the CMB is the nicest illustration, why in first approximation the CMB is very smooth and perturbations are small, while I would expect completely different temperatures in different spots in the sky. Okay, now I have to deal with the blackboard. Okay, so if one wants to be, so please interrupt me if there's something. Okay, so let me be a bit more quantitative, so I can estimate what is the size in the sky of these regions, okay, just to have an idea of how big these spots in the sky I expect to be. What we have to calculate, we said that the particle horizon at a given time is of the order of the Hubble radius in, let's assume that we are in matter dominance, which is a good approximation for the CMB. So I have to compare the Hubble radius at recombination, taking into account that there is an expansion between recombination and nowadays, and compare it to the present Hubble radius A0. Okay, so this ratio is the number of independent spots that I expect in the sky. Well, if you do it, you get that this goes like AR over A0 to the 1/2, using matter dominance evolution. And this ratio is the redshift of recombination, which is of order 1,000, 1,100, something like this. So clearly this is a very rough estimate, but you get something like, I don't know, 1/4, 1/35, something like this. So this means that I would expect, okay, this is a very rough estimate because the numbers are a bit different, but in first approximation, I expect to see the CMB map as a collection of spots with a completely different temperature with a few degrees of dimension. So this is what I would expect, with completely different temperature. Because I'm looking at the regions that they didn't have time even to talk with each other. Forget about thermalizing. Okay, you may say, okay, bah, that's not so severe at the end. It's not a very big problem. But the problem becomes even more severe if you go backwards in time. And this is clear from this picture. So if you go backwards in time, imagine that you want to set the initial conditions for our universe at just below the Planck scale, because I don't know what to do with the Planck scale, so I just go a bit below, let's say at 10 to 17 GeV. Well, you can do the same thing. The only difference is that now it's a good approximation to use radiation dominance, because clearly the universe is radiation dominated at early times. So you can do the same thing. So you can calculate the Hubble radius at a Planckish era and compare these with the present Hubble time. In radiation dominance, this goes like A, not there is no square root, as you can check. And I'm assuming radiation dominance all the way. And this is just the ratio between the present CMB temperature and the Planckian temperature. So this is of order 10 to minus 13. So this means that this problem becomes more and more severe as I go towards the Planck scale. At the Planck scale, if I want to set initial conditions just after the Big Bang, just when my theory starts to make sense, the problem is that my universe is composed to it's composed by 10 to the 30 cube regions, which nowadays they form our observable universe. But at the time, close to the Planck era, they are out of causal contact one from the others. Okay, so the picture is that really I have to set initial conditions in these 10 to the 90 boxes in such a way that nowadays what we see is something very homogeneous. But I have to set initial conditions in 10 to the 90 independent regions. So why the universe started in this way? Now, before getting to inflation, let me mention one point, which we can call Planck abracadabra. Abracadabra. No, I think it's an important point, in the sense that it's a good attitude to say, okay, so what? I mean, at the end, we don't know anything about Planck scale. I mean, in first approximation, really nothing. So say that there is a problem to set initial conditions in a region in which basically there is no control of the theory, I mean, it's not a big problem. So maybe it's true that when, if ever, we know something about quantum gravity in close to the Big Bang, maybe the picture will completely change. Maybe the notion of causality, the notion of every notion that you have in mind is wrong. And at the Planck scale, everything is different. The locality does not exist. All these drawings are just crap. And you have to think about it in a completely different way. So this scenario, I call it Planck abracadabra, in the sense that for the time being, we have no idea what this means. But it's important to keep in mind, because we cannot sell inflation or any alternative as, I mean, there is no way to prove inflation or an alternative using this method. We can motivate these scenarios. But there is a logical possibility that maybe all these problems are just coming from the fact that we don't know what happens at the beginning. We don't know how to control the Planckian regime. Let me notice two things. First of all, let me notice that this problem is extremely severe when we get to the Planck scale. Okay, so it's becoming, I mean, okay, if we trust a bit the notion of causality or something, as we approach the Planck era, the separation between the particle horizon and the present Hubble volume becomes huge. Okay, so if you want, the more you approach the Planck era, the more difficult, the more severe the problem is, because the universe becomes divided into many, many regions. So at least naively, it seems that it doesn't go for sure in the right direction. Okay, but still, maybe it doesn't mean anything. Anyway, so I think we have to sell inflation as a way to solve these problems in a controllable way, in a way which in which we can write formulas and making predictions, and that's it. So we are not going to prove any inflation as the only logical possibility. So the Planck abracadabra is always there. Okay, so. Okay, so I think you are familiar with this problem, so I don't spend more time. What is the solution to this? Well, phrased in this way, the solution is very easy. So we calculated this quantity. So if there are questions, interrupt me, because I'm going fast, because otherwise I fall asleep. Okay, let me, the problem comes from this integral, okay? The problem is that this integral in the conventional cosmology is of order of the Hubble radius, given or taken a factor of order one, so we don't know what to do. But let me rewrite this quantity as in this way. So let me change variables and write the integral over A. Okay, I just changed variables from T to A. And you see what happens. So you see that, okay, if you forget about this term, this is a log. So this means that it's divergent in both directions. But you see that the convergence of this integral towards zero or towards A depends clearly on this parameter. In particular, in the example we are looking at, A dot is always increasing as I go backwards in time because the universe is decelerating. This means that this integral converges, and then everything is dominated by the upper integration limit, and it gives a result of order of the Abel radius. But clearly, if on the other hand I consider a period in which A double dot is positive, I'm always going to consider expanding universes. So there is no bounds or anything. So if the universe is accelerating backwards in the past, this integral becomes dominated by the lowest integration variable. So all the picture completely changes. Okay. So in particular, I mean, if this period is long enough, this integral really diverges in going backwards in time. That's why we are motivated to look for a period with these features, which in general I call, as I said, inflation. Okay, clearly by this definition, we are inflating nowadays. Given the experimental evidence, clearly what we are interested in is a period of acceleration in the primordial universe. Okay, so in before the conventional successful hot FRW cosmology. Okay, so the standard cosmology really confuses two different scales. Okay, which are one is the Abel radius and the other is this particle horizon, which in general they have completely different meaning. One is integrated over the whole history, so it's something which has to do with the whole history of the universe. One is something on the other end calculated at a given time, and they also answer different questions. So the Abel radius says something about when for a given process the expansion of the universe is or is not important. Okay, so it gives the typical scale of expansion at a given time, while this integral tells me something about causality and something about the whole history of the universe. So the fact that these two quantities are related is just coming from the fact that we are considering a decelerated cosmology, but if I have a period of inflation, then these two scales are completely different and separated. Okay, so okay, so let me before trying to find a phase with these properties, let me see the problem in another way, which will turn out to be useful later. Where do I do it? It's extremely dangerous. Okay. So another way to phrase the same problems is to look at this ratio. Okay. I think it is useful. I'm sure that you already talked about this in the case of equipyrotic bouncing models. So it's important because it gives all the information about the kinematic of the model. So what I'm doing here, I'm comparing a given physical wave vector, which is k over a, or given you take a given scale in your universe, okay, for example, I don't know, the scale of galaxies, typical scale of a galaxy nowadays, I follow as a function of time, and I compare it with the Hubble radius. Okay? So why this quantity, this ratio is relevant? Because when this quantity is much larger than one, we say that the mode is inside the Hubble radius. So in this case, I can forget about the expansion of the universe. Okay, so the mode is very, very short compared to the Hubble radius. So basically, it lives in Minkowski and doesn't care about cosmology. On the other hand, when it's outside, it's clearly dominated by the expansion of the universe. So the two, there are two regimes for a given mode that, for a given wavelength, that they behave completely different in the two regimes. So notice that this quantity can also be written as k over, so h is a dot over a. Okay. So the evolution in time of a dot, which is the same as the presence or not of inflation, tells me whether this quantity decreases or increases as a function of time. Okay, so let me draw a picture, which I'm sure you saw many times. So if I plot as a function of log of the scale factor, okay, I plot everything in log scale. Okay, I can plot two things. I can plot the evolution of a wavelength. Okay, so just the inverse of this. So I'm just taking a wavelength, and as the universe expands, the wavelength expand following the evolution. Okay, just proportional to the scale factor. And then I can compare it to the Hubble scale. Okay. Well, it's easy to see that. There are two regimes, so I'm plotting H inverse, so the Hubble distance. During radiation dominance, this goes like A squared. During matter dominance, it goes like A to the 3 halves. Okay. But what is important is that it's always, as a function of time, it increases faster than lambda A. So this means that as time goes on, as time goes on, modes enter in the Hubble radius. Okay, so if I take a given wavelength, before at the early times, it's huge. It's much larger than the Hubble radius, so it's completely dominated by the expansion. But as time goes on, it crosses the Hubble radius and it becomes sub-Hubble, and it starts becoming a wavelength in Minkowski. Okay, so you see that in this picture, there is something wrong, and this is another way to formulate the same problem. That so all modes, they start in this picture out of the Hubble radius. So the initial condition for each Fourier mode describing our universe must be set when it is out of the Hubble radius. Okay, so every mode that enters as time goes on, I have to set an initial condition, and this initial condition clearly must be set in a regime in which there is no causal physics. So I have to put by hand my initial condition. So it's not a nice picture, because I would expect that every time some monster enters in the Hubble radius, because it's the first time that the mode starts to evolve causally. Before it was larger than the Hubble radius, so there was no causal evolution. So this picture is weird from this point of view. But again, inflation solved this problem, because when a double dot is positive, the situation reverses, and the Hubble radius start doing like this. Okay, the situation reverses, and the life of a given mode now is very different. So if I postulate that there is a phase of inflation at the beginning, the life of a mode is the following. So it starts inside the Hubble radius. So practically, if I go backwards in time a lot, in Minkowski. Then a certain time, it crosses the Abbot radius, it starts realizing that the universe is expanding, it goes out of the Abbot radius, okay, it stays out for a while until eventually it comes back in and is observed nowadays. Okay? So the situation is very different. And now you see that, at least in principle, the problems can be solved because the initial conditions for each mode can be set not in this phase in which there is no causal physics that you can use, but deep inside the Abbot radius when it's conceivable that, I mean, then it's a question to set up in your favorite models, but at least in principle you can set the initial conditions when the modes are sub-Abbot. Okay. Any question about this? Okay, so did Luke show something similar for bouncy models? Yes. Okay, anyway, so one of the exercises would be to compare the two things in the case of inflation and bouncing models, okay? So think about it because, I mean, it's very simple, but it's something that one has to keep in mind. It's the basic kinematics of inflation. Now, I don't have time to talk much about other problems, like the curvature problem. Let me say two words. So the curvature problem is very similar to this plot. So it's the problem of why, when I write down the Friedmann equation, including a curvature term, why this term, you know that presently we don't see any sign of spatial curvature in the universe, but the curvature goes like 1 over a squared. So in particular, it becomes more and more relevant if I live in matter dominance or radiation dominance. So if nowadays this is very small, it means that during matter dominance, radiation dominance, this term was really minuscule compared to the matter density or the energy density in radiation. So again, this is a question of fine-tuning of initial conditions. And if you think about it, you can look at this diagram, and you look at think about this as the curvature, the spatial curvature of your universe. The same diagram can be used. And clearly, inflation, again, is a solution to this fine-tuning problem, because H is A dot squared over A squared. So if I compare these two terms, you see that depending on what happens to A double dot, the curvature becomes more or less relevant as the universe expands. And in particular, during inflation, the curvature becomes less and less relevant compared to the Abbot radius, like this plot shows. One important conclusion is that, which is considered a prediction of inflation, is that, okay, if we postulate that I have a very long period of inflation to solve all my problems of initial condition, during this period, this term becomes less and less relevant compared to the Abbot expansion, so it drops out of the equation. So if I mean, it's quite natural to that if inflation is long enough, the universe becomes completely flat. So the curvature parameter, so the critical, the universe becomes critical in the sense that the curvature is absent, completely absent. Again, this is a bit of a question of initial conditions, but it's true that if you want to avoid any strange choice of initial conditions, you expect that in the presence of inflation, the present universe should be flat, because there is a long phase when the curvature becomes completely diluted away by the acceleration. Okay? So this is considered a prediction of inflation. Clearly, it's not completely robust in the sense that it's just a qualitative, I mean, the absence of spatial curvature, but given that the present constraints are quite strong, it's an indication that we are on the right track. Okay. Okay, so we are motivated. I hope, I mean, this is just a review of something that I'm sure you know. We are motivated to look for a phase of expansion when the second derivative of the scale factor is positive. So one can ask how to get a double dot positive. Well, I have to say that nowadays that we are accelerating, everything is too simple. So now it seems difficult not to accelerate, given that we are accelerating nowadays. But let's look at the second Friedmann equation. Okay. So you see that to have a positive a double dot, we need this quantity to be negative. So that's why standard matter does not do the job, because usually you have either negligible pressure or a pressure which is like a relativistic matter. So, but still positive. So usually for conventional matter, this is clearly positive, and so that you have deceleration. So you need something which is a bit unconventional. So somebody will say that we need that gravity becomes repulsive during inflation. Clearly, this is one of the worst ways to put to describe the situation, because I don't know what it means. Clearly, nowadays we are accelerating, but gravity is clearly attractive. So I don't know. People go around say that gravity is repulsive during inflation, but it's not the case. Gravity is always the same. What we need is a stress energy tensor, which is a bit unconventional, because it must have a large and negative pressure in such a way that for this kind of matter, gravity acts in a repulsive way. Clearly, if I take two sources during inflation, they will attract. But I'm looking for a strange stress energy tensor which induces acceleration. Okay, for the aficionados of GR, let me say that this inequality violates the so-called strong energy condition, which is an equality that says this for every time like t. And if you plug this inequality in a FRW setting, this is just equivalent to the fact that this quantity is positive, so you cannot have acceleration. So, okay, this is called the strong energy condition. I don't know what to do with this, in the sense that energy conditions are usually proposed as a tool to prove theorems. Okay, so it's not that we have, and usually these theorems say that there is singularity, so it's not that we are completely happy about this kind of inequalities, unless there is some more profound problem with this kind of inequalities. So I don't think that the strong energy condition is very relevant, given that a positive cosmological constant for sure violates this inequality, and I don't think anybody thinks that there is something pathological in a positive cosmological constant. Okay, so this is just a mathematical statement, so it violates this condition. Okay, so good. Well, as I said, nowadays everything is very simple because we are accelerating. Okay, so we know that a vacuum energy, a positive vacuum energy, has pressure equal to minus rho, so that this quantity is negative for a positive vacuum energy, for a positive cosmological constant. So we all know that a positive lambda gives an accelerating universe. Okay, so, and we know that in particular the solution in the FRW standard coordinates of in the presence of the cosmological constant gives an accelerated expansion with the scale factor growing exponentially in time. So it's an exponential, so it has a positive second derivative. Okay, so fine. Now, what is the problem with this? What is the problem with this? So in the sense, okay, why we are not happy about this statement? Why a positive, so you can say, okay, I want inflation in the early universe. Okay, fine. A positive cosmological constant gives an accelerated expansion. So why the cosmological constant is not enough?
You don't want inflation in the late universe.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So clearly, here we don't only want acceleration; we want an acceleration and then a deceleration. So we want this phase to be for a while. Clearly, if I impose that there is a large cosmological constant in my universe, then I will start inflating, but then I'm not going to terminate. I'm not going to begin a decelerated hot FRW evolution. So what I need is, so this is a good starting point, but I need something like this with a clock. So I need that this phase goes on, and at a certain time, somebody tells me that I have to stop and to do something else. Okay? So I need something like the sitter, something like this kind of evolution. So this is called the sitter space. But with a clock that tells me what to do and when to terminate this evolution. Okay, before getting to models of these, let me point out that, which probably I'm just repeating something, but let me point out this important inequality. Okay, so what I want to see with this is the following. Don't confuse acceleration, which is the fact that this quantity is positive, okay, with the fact that this quantity is positive, okay? Why I'm stressing this? I'm stressing this because acceleration, this is what we need for inflation, just requires to violate this strong energy condition, and in particular, a positive cosmological constant is fine. Okay? So it's not something, as we see, something that we can realize quite easily. On the other hand, it's a bit more difficult to realize a positive H dot. Okay, and a positive H dot is what you need if you want a bounce. Let me be more specific. If I want a four-dimensional theory in which the scale factor in the absence of curvature, a four-dimensional evolution which goes through a minimum, so it contracts and then expands, okay? This is what I call a bounce, so a four-dimensional bounce, something which is described by a four-dimensional FRW, then clearly I have to satisfy this condition, because at the bounce, so A reaches a minimum, is A is a function of time, so A reaches a minimum, so the universe contracts and then expands. So at this point, H is zero, okay, but it has a positive derivative, so H dot is positive. It's, I mean, I don't want to repeat what has already been said in these lectures, but clearly it's much more difficult to realize this situation. For example, a cosmological constant or something similar cannot do the job. And in particular, this inequality violates another condition, which is called the null energy condition. which says that for every null vector, I need this to be positive. Okay. So again, to have a four-dimensional bounce in the absence of curvature, I need H dot to be positive, which violates the so-called null energy condition. So clearly, we are doing something very violent here, because so we want a phase such that, so this is equivalent in FRW, in FRW language, to have rho plus p negative. Okay. So this means that if you write down the conservation of energy, the covariant conservation of a stress energy tensor, this means that if you violate this condition, in an expanding universe, the energy density can increase. Okay. Usually, it's clearly, if I expand, you expect very intuitively that the energy density drops. But if I violate this condition, there is a possibility that in expanding universe, the energy density increases as a function of time. So I don't want to spend time on this because there are other lectures on this, but I just want to stress that the two situations are quite different, and don't confuse the acceleration of the universe that we need in inflation to what you need if you want to realize a four-dimensional bounce without curvature, because they require different ingredients. Is it clear? Okay. Questions? I think I will start. Okay, I will start erasing blackboards. Okay, so now it's time to try to find the way to erase the blackboard. Okay, so how do we realize this phase of accelerated expansion? Originally, you may know that the first proposal is what is nowadays called old inflation. Old inflation is the simplest idea that probably can come to your mind, because as we said that a positive cosmological constant is a good candidate for having inflation, then you may say, okay, well, I want a cosmological constant, so I want to be stuck somewhere on a potential with a positive cosmological constant. But as you said, I'm not happy to stay there forever, because I want to have a conventional cosmology with matter and things going on. So I want this phase to terminate. Well, the simplest way I can imagine is to say, okay, but maybe the potential is like this, and at a certain point I will tunnel and finish my inflation time. Okay, so this was the original proposal by Alan Guth, which is nowadays called old inflation. What's wrong with this proposal? I mean, clearly, I will make the story short, but it's not so simple. But I'm talking about this because the fact that this does not solve, is not a viable candidate nowadays for inflation, does not mean that a process like this did not happen in the early universe. Okay. In fact, I'm sure that you are familiar a bit with this picture of a landscape in which there are various minima of the potential in a string theory. In string theory, and this kind of process in which I tunnel from one minima to the other is relevant. It's probably relevant cosmologically. So it's something which may have happened, but it cannot I mean, I also need some other form of inflation that we are going to discuss. But this kind of process is probably something still relevant cosmologically. That's why I want to say a few words. So why it cannot is not enough to solve our problems? Well, the system is characterized by a quantity gamma, which is the decay rate per unit time and a unit volume. It's like a quantum mechanical tunneling, but clearly it can happen everywhere in space. Okay, so that I have this quantity, which is a decay rate per unit time, but also per unit volume. Okay, is an object of dimension 4, which is in principle not so difficult to calculate once you have the potential. It's just given by an instanton solution, which you can calculate. Let me refer to the famous papers by Coleman, but for us it's not so relevant. Anyway, given the potential, I can calculate this in a similar way as I do when I calculate the tunneling rate in quantum mechanics. Now, there are two possibilities. One, I have to compare gamma with the only scale, the other scales which is relevant, which is the Hubble expansion, the Hubble rate. So there are two possibilities. The situation in between is a bit tricky, but let me start with this. So if the second is true, this means that basically the tunneling rate happens very fast inside an Hubble volume and in an Hubble time. So this means that basically the decay is instantaneous. So practically in this limit, I don't inflate. I just reach this point and then I tunnel immediately. Okay, so there is no inflation. I mean, I should be more quantitative, but intuitively there is no time to solve this problem. So I accelerate, but I accelerate for a short time, so I don't solve any problem in this fashion. In the opposite case, the situation is more tricky because now I inflate a lot. So what's wrong? Okay, I had a lot of inflation, so I'm happy. But I'm not completely happy because what happens afterwards? Qualitatively, what happens when I tunnel through this barrier is that I generate a bubble. Okay, it's like when water boils. So I generate a bubble. I mean, I have this tunneling. I generate a bubble of a new minimum. Okay, so it just pops out from nothing. And then these bubbles start expanding, and the walls of the bubble goes at the speed of light, asymptotically. Okay. So this is you can calculate everything, and if you have time, you can read in these papers by Coleman. So you generate a bubble, and then the bubble expands at the speed of light. So if the universe is not expanding, fine. So I will generate some bubbles here and there. They will expand. Then another bubble will generate here, and will do the same. So that asymptotically in the future I will reach the new minimum, okay? Because all the bubbles will coalesce to form the new phase, and I will have. And I'm happy because I finished inflation. The problem is that this picture holds in Minkowski spacetime when the universe is not expanding. If the universe is expanding, the fact that two bubbles coalesce and they touch, I mean, the walls of the bubble reach each other is not trivial, because at the same time the universe is expanding. So you are expanding at the speed of light, but at the same time the spacetime between the bubbles is expanding. And it's in some sense the situation is the opposite as the one we were considering. Now eta, so this integral converges in the future, because it diverges now in the past, but during inflation it converges in the future. So if I draw a diagram in eta it has a future boundary because this integral is finite in the future. So from this diagram, you see that if I nucleate two bubbles which are sufficiently far away, they will never be able to talk with each other. So the point is that if this inequality is holds, bubbles do not. Boy, I don't know how to write it. Something like this. Sorry. I mean, what I'm saying is the bubbles will not form the new phase because you will generate some bubble here and there, but the universe is expanding so fast that it will never be able to reach the new phase. Okay, what happens in between is a bit more tricky, and in fact, it needs a couple of years to understand that this was not a viable proposal because you can expect that maybe if you live in between, you form a new phase, you inflate a bit, maybe it's okay, but at the end you can prove that this is not the case. So also in the intermediate region, you don't have a viable scenario. Yeah.
Well, inflation, in which the transition never completes either, isn't the problem that these bubbles are basically empty?
Okay, no. Okay, this is a very, very good question. So this is something that I wanted to say now. So a complete, let me rephrase your question. You may ask, why I cannot live inside one bubble? No, at the end, I inflate, then one bubble forms and we live inside the bubble. Some people, you can read in books that the problem is that inside the bubble, you cannot reheat. Okay? You don't have energy, and so you cannot form the hot FRW model. This is completely wrong, because as you see from this picture, the exit point in a generic case is very far from the minimum of potential, so this is very similar to slow roll inflation. I will start oscillating around this, and I will start generating stuff. So the problem with all the inflation is not the problem of reheating inside the bubble, okay? The reason why you cannot live inside the bubble is that the inside the bubble, I don't have to discuss in detail, but you have an open FRW. So the surface of homogeneity are curved, okay, and the curvature is dominant, okay. So the picture is that when you generate a bubble inside the sitter of radius h, the bubble has a radius smaller than h inverse, obviously, it's inside the horizon, but then also the curvature of the new open FRW is very large, okay, so that unless you have additional inflation inside, but then you didn't solve anything, you have to inflate again, you are dominated by curvature, so you didn't solve the problem. So this is a very important point because sometimes it's written also in many textbooks. So there is no problem of reheating inside a bubble. So if you want, there is a problem of reheating in the sense that you don't, if you call reheating the formation of the new phase does not form in this regime because there is no time to form, to coalesce and to form the new phase. And the problem of living inside a single bubble is not reheating, but the fact that you're dominated by curvature. In fact, if in the landscape business, the picture is that maybe there are these kind of transitions. Maybe we live inside a bubble, but we need additional inflation inside the bubble to solve the curvature problem. Okay? So this is the picture. That's why all the inflation is still relevant, because it may be a process of, the first step, and then you have another form of inflation.
What happens when the
This is very, the dynamics is very complicated. So the point is that when I say that this is an open FRW, what I mean is that if I look at the surface of homogeneity, like the surface is, for example, of constant scalar field value. Inside the bubble, they are curved, and they have an open geometry. Okay, So, and the same will be true here, okay? So you have many open FRW inside. So inside the universe is homogeneous, inside the universe is homogeneous, but then the whole space-time is not homogeneous. So when the two will coalesce, they will make a mess, and they will, when the two bubbles will coalesce, there is no homogeneous approximation. So you are not in FRW anymore, in the sense that it's not homogeneous. But then, if you are in this condition, so if there is enough nucleation rate to form a new phase, eventually all these inhomogeneities on short scales will disappear to give rise to a flat FRW. So the picture is that if the nucleation rate is sufficiently fast, then okay, you have this micro universe which looks like a open FRW, but then all these inhomogeneities will dilute away to form a new thermal FRW phase. Okay, let me stop 5 minutes before.